Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by Scientific Triathlon and hosted by me, Michael Eriksson. I'm joined once again by Jack Hutchins. Welcome back, Jack. How are you doing today?
Hey, Michael. Thanks a lot for having me. Yeah, all good. Been out on the bike this weekend. It's been very, very nice. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good as well. I'm finally getting over, it seems my, not getting over, that's the wrong word, but I have my hamstring injuries under control. So I put together a pretty good week of running, 85 kilometers. We're recording here on the Sunday, so I actually just wrapped up the week with a shorter treadmill VO2 session. So that was really nice, really enjoyed that. It was only my second intense session since I got sick at the very start of December. So I feel like I've turned a corner and fitness is starting to, I'm in a good place to start to build fitness again.
Nice. That's some decent volume you did there. Better than me at the moment with my still ongoing injury, unfortunately. But nice.
It's also easier when I don't do any swimming and cycling at the moment, even though it is a bit, it's sad not to do cycling because we've had some really nice weather here on the Portuguese west coast, and the itch to go out and ride a bike is sometimes very high, but it's just like times are very busy and with the baby especially. But actually, one thing that I did, kind of inspired by something you said on our last episode, was after the run session that I just did, we have a bit of a home gym down in the basement, so my wife came down with the baby and we basically took turns to do sets of whatever exercises we were doing, and then in between, while resting, the other person made sure the baby didn't get too bored and frustrated. But we used that to do things like split squats with him, or hip thrusters with him, and military press with him, all of those sorts of things. And that worked out really nicely, and he really enjoyed it as well, being going up and down those sorts of things. So that was fun, that was cool, and it was a good suggestion that you had there in the last episode.
Ah, awesome! Getting him in the gym early, Yeah, nice work. That's such a nice use of time, right? That you can kind of just get everything in intertwined within your day-to-day routine. So,
And it's a nice way to just spend time together, all three of us, which is hard when in this period of life sometimes. So it's a good way to do that. And what about the state of your injury and your recovery process? How have things been going?
Yeah, it's been rough, honestly. The chest, as I said last time, it's not an easy one in terms of recovery. If anyone's ever experienced any kind of rib bruising or that sort of stuff, you kind of feel like it's getting better and then it's back down again. But actually, I feel like I've finally turned a corner. I did 4 hours on the bike yesterday, which felt like I'd done about 6 hours because I'm just that little bit deconditioned. But yeah, I feel all right today. So hopefully from tomorrow, I'm going to try a swim and we'll see how we go from there. But yeah, I'm excited to get the body going again and get back into some decent training volume, hopefully in the next few weeks. It's still early in the year. I had a really good kind of initial phase of this year, or the 2026 season, started early back in October with some good training. So I've banked some good form, and there's still time to kind of still take a step from that and hopefully progress into the season. So it's all good. But today,
Jack, do you know when you're starting your racing season? Is that is that something that is official, or are you sitting on that for a while still?
Yeah, I'm toying. I mean, it was going to be April. Was going to be my first race. I was going to do Challenge Gran Canaria. Was on the cards. With this crash now, I'm just going to see how the next few weeks go, see how the return to form goes. I don't want to rush anything. My reflection from last year is that I probably did a little bit too much and in terms of racing and had a couple of illnesses, and then I'm always kind of on the back foot trying to chase and trying to get more results in when you feel like you're not performing as you were in the last one. It's easy to go and try and find another, whereas this year I'm really going to race a bit less and make sure that the start lines I'm turning up for, I'm ready to go and coming in with a lot of confidence. So yeah, it could be still Challenge Gran Canaria, but it might not now be until May that I'm opening my season. So still a long time. But the winter's where we make the big gains, right? So I want to make sure that I'm giving myself that opportunity to progress from last year rather than continuing on the same kind of momentum of racing, getting a bit of training in, racing, getting a bit of training in. So yeah, still time. And yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Let's see where you end up, but I'm sure that the listeners will be following along, whether it's Gran Canaria or later on in May. Should we head into our main topic for today?
Let's do it. I think you have a bonus session to start, right?
Yeah, so let's first set the stage here. So today's episode format is so-called power rankings, and we're going to power rank our favorite swim sessions. And favorite, not in terms of these are the most fun sessions, but good sessions. Of course, we're coaching different kinds of people, different kinds of athletes, or both of us have very many different diverse athletes. So not every session, there's no one perfect session and all of that. But we're basically going to try to rank sessions that we use a lot, give a lot to athletes. And maybe some of them we use less, but we still think they're really good for specific use cases. So yeah, sessions we want to highlight that we think are good sessions. And also, in many cases, I think that, or at least on my list, sessions that I actually find very enjoyable. So it's a mix actually based on coaching experience and also athlete experience, because some of the sessions that I have on my list are not sessions that I tend to prescribe so much, and I'll explain why when I get to those, but it's sessions that I found really useful as an athlete when I was really focused on my swim training and triathlon training. So yeah, as you said, I have a bonus session because I couldn't decide. Well, I could decide eventually on the top five, but I wanted to mention just one that just missed out on a place on the list, and that is a 1,000 meter time trial. It's kind of the test of truth in swimming. When we get to our testing episode eventually, I'll probably talk about how in my critical speed test nowadays, I actually have changed to using a 200, 400, and 800. So it doesn't quite fit in there. But if you're going to do one time trial as a triathlete, I would say that a 1,000 meter time trial, or 1,000 yard time trial, you just can't beat it, because it will tell you about your actual ability and readiness to swim fast in a race. Because a 400 time trial, while it's great, it will tell you a lot about your technique and more about your top end, perhaps, than the 1,000, where endurance comes more into play. But in most of our race distances, endurance is such an important part that we need to kind of have that information as well. So for one standalone test, a 1,000 time trial is what I'd go for. So that's my bonus episode that didn't quite make the top five.
Nice. Yeah, test of truth. I like that. And it's brutal, but I definitely agree that if you're going to choose one time trial, it needs to be a bit longer in our context. I guess a good story here is when I first moved to triathlon from swimming, I actually could jump in the pool and smash out a decent 400. I think I went at 4:31 within about 6 months of swim training. But as soon as I tried to translate that form to triathlon, I was nowhere, just because you have that significant anaerobic contribution, and you can really get away with that really high lactate tolerance, lactate production to kind of smash out a good 400. And so it's not showing the full picture, right? If you're just doing a shorter TT like that. And yeah, it takes a long time to get there, but having that 1,000, it kind of gives you a decent marker in terms of intensity prescription, and also just an idea of where you're at more realistically in the context of our sport.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you want to start with the number five session on your list then, and then we take turns?
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, my first session is not really a session or a set specifically. So I'm going to start with the use of an ankle band and pool buoy. As I said, it's not a specific set that I've got here that I'm going to say to you, but I'm going to give some examples. I always like to add in the ankle band and pool buoy, mainly for the kind of technical execution, and it forces better body position by removing the kick. You have to engage your core. You have to it basically builds a lot of upper body strength through a good catch and pull efficiency. It's also very specific to triathlon, where kicking is minimal. But the main reason that I really like to use an ankle band and a pull buoy is that it kind of exposes any flaws in your stroke. So any big body position or left-right imbalances that you have, if you really struggle with an ankle band and a pull buoy, then you know that there's some major technical stuff going on with your stroke. And so you basically, using the ankle band itself is going to help iron out those imbalances and those problems, but also it should give you an idea that you can then take back to your full stroke when you're swimming with the kick involved as well. So if you really struggle with even a 25 meter with an ankle band, then you're going to need to break it up quite a lot, but you should progress quite quickly. So you might even have to start with just, you know, 8 25s or something with short rest, but you should be able to progress up to longer rep duration, rep distances, and even some decent continuous swimming there. So if it's a real flaw that's kind of been highlighted there, then I like to include even up to 10 to 20% of all your swim volume with a band, especially early in the year. And yeah, as I said, there's a lot to be gained from using it. I think it is underutilized, especially in Europe. In the Aussies tend to use it quite a bit. It's big in the surf lifesaving scene. But yeah, I think in the UK and Europe, it's underutilized, and it's definitely a lot of benefits to be had from it.
You've done the famous Australian method for swimming, right? You spent some time with the JR squad at some point in your career. Was that something that featured frequently there?
Yeah, I did do a camp with JR. He actually doesn't use it loads, but yeah, he definitely uses it more than I experienced elsewhere. And I know some other squads down there and other coaches use it a lot. So yeah, it definitely works for those guys. I think if you're looking at pure swimmers, then it doesn't have quite as much of a place. But as I said, when it comes to swimming open water and triathlon, it really is underutilized, and there's a lot to be gained.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think a couple of other things that I also think it does that I don't think you mentioned were just for people that have like big dead spots in their stroke. So for example, just stopping at the end of their extension and basically gliding, over gliding, it can really iron out that, because your legs are going to sink if you have dead spots there and you don't create consistent propulsion. And just low stroke rate, that's in a way that also tends to go hand in hand with dead spots in the stroke, but it can help increase the stroke rate a bit for people that have too low stroke rates, basically. Is there a level of swimming where, let's say, you're quite new and your speed is, I don't know, if you're around 2 minutes per 100, do you still prescribe that, or is there a level of swimming where you'd consider it too advanced of a technique?
No, I think anyone can use it. Some people, as I said, if they are really, really reliant on their kick, or their kick is masking or compensating for some other large problems at the front end or other parts of the stroke, then they might really, really struggle. But I don't find that it's necessarily speed related, but more technique related. So I've tried this with a complete range and spectrum of athletes, and yeah, most of the time it does a lot of good. So yeah, I wouldn't shy away from giving it a go. Obviously, you need a pull buoy in there, and that may be something that you play around with. If you've just got one of those tiny little pull buoys, you might need a little bit more buoyancy at the back end there, something a bit bigger to start with. But yeah, I think most people should be able to swim at least 25. And if you're struggling, I think that's the point, really, is that there's something going on that you need to address, and something that is going to help with your progression if you do figure out what's there.
And do you ever progress to doing it without a pull buoy, just band, for really advanced swimmers?
Yeah, it can be done. It's difficult. And I think you also need to look at the kind of body shape and body type of swimmer. Triathletes, we're generally low body fat. We potentially have longer legs, more muscle density there than pure swimmers. So it's just going to be a lot harder in those examples, right? But yeah, I think it is a valuable part of the progression if you can get there with some athletes.
Well, I like that. I am definitely already inspired to use that a bit more. I do use it, but definitely not to the same extent that it sounds like you are. My number five is a speed-focused session. So the way that I've done it personally as an athlete that I really enjoyed, even though it's brutal, is as a relay. So this is a, you could have a 3 to 4 person team, and you're basically doing a relay against other teams of the same number of team members, and you're doing 50s. So you might have, let's say you have 4 teams of 3 people, you're doing 2 rounds. So everybody goes through 2 rounds of doing a 50, then the next person does a 50, and then the third person does a 50, and then you do a 50 again. It's all from a dive. So like a proper relay in swimming. And then once you've completed the 2 rounds, you take some additional rest, and then you might repeat that a second time. So then that way you end up getting in 4 50s. If you're in a really advanced squad, then you could even do a third time and get in 300 meters of speed work. But I think getting in about 200 meters of speed work in that way, 4 50s, that's really a good session. And if you have 3 to 4 people per team, then you will get about a 1 to 2 or 1 to 3 work to rest ratio, which for this kind of speed work is quite appropriate. But what I think is really great about doing it as a relay is that it just gives you that extra motivation. Doing it from a dive in a relay, it increases the stakes, right? And it really forces you to get the most out of yourself, especially for us triathletes. We generally don't like that kind of short, sharp pain. And so we almost have to trick ourselves to do it really properly. But of course, that's a very specific session for a squad environment that works there. For most people, that's just not the reality. And you can just as well do a similar session in a solo environment where you just take that same concept, doing 2 50s of a 1 to 2 or 1 to 3 work to rest ratio. So let's say you do it in 40 seconds, then you would take 120 or 2 minutes of rest and do the second one. Then you would take additional rest, both active recovery and some passive recovery, and then do the same thing again. And again, doing that two rounds, probably starting with that is fine. And if you're a really good swimmer, then you could do 3 rounds. So yeah, that's a speed session, which I think is a bit underutilized for triathletes, especially age group triathletes. And so yeah, that's something I would recommend. You can definitely get it in as a solo session. If you can get it in a group, even better, even more fun.
Yeah, that's definitely a way to dig deep there. When in the season do you typically use that, and how often?
Yeah, to be honest, I would do it. I would probably with most age groupers, I would do it earlier in the year. Bit of a reverse periodization, philosophy there for people doing longer races and where the swim isn't so important. When I was doing it as an athlete in the squad that I was in, the focus was on draft legal racing, so it was really a useful session to do in the competitive phase of the season, because the swim was so important and that sort of takeout speed was really race specific. So we did that. We also did it during winter, but it didn't really stop. It was more of almost a year round thing. Definitely not every week, but repeating it once every 2 or once every 3 weeks or so, almost throughout the year. I think you could do that. I think for most triathletes, especially age group triathletes that don't have that high glycolytic and anaerobic capacity, don't have an ability to produce really high lactates, it's not going to take a lot out of you. It's different if you're a top swimmer or even a top triathlete with a high lactate production capacity, then you really need to think about how much it's going to take out of you. But if you're not able to really, really bury yourself in that kind of session, which most of our listeners are not, including myself, then I don't think it's a session that really requires a lot of recovery compared to some other more higher volume sessions at slightly lower intensities. So I wouldn't be worried about using it on some sort of regular basis throughout the year, honestly.
Yeah, nice. No, I like it.
So what is your number 4?
So number 4, this is a very specific session really towards guys and girls doing an Ironman basically. And it's super boring, but this is the intent. 10 400s of 15 to 20 seconds rest at Ironman or close to Ironman effort. It's not something that is going to be used regularly. So I like to have this in there just to give people the confidence that they can get it done. And in an Ironman, you're in the water for a long time. It can be quite boring, especially if you're out there solo, you don't have any groups to swim with. And, you know, if it's a big one lap swim, and a lot of people have some kind of concerns whether they're going to be able to do the distance and how they're going to feel during that. You know, you may have done a couple of 2 kilometer open water swims or something, and you're kind of a bit finding the thought of doing the full distance a bit daunting. So having this kind of a session in there a couple of times in the build, it doesn't need to be many more than that, once or twice, is a really good way to kind of prepare mentally for what's to come on the day of the race. It does also serve as a very specific session physiologically as well. But the main reason is that mental durability, that kind of boredom tolerance that can be a little bit overlooked. So if you're, in terms of execution, I would still recommend that people look for a little bit of progressive or negative split kind of pacing. So build into it, as you probably would look to aim to do on race day. But it gives you a good insight in how the fatigue builds or creeps in over a kind of swim of that duration. So it's also teaching kind of pacing discipline. And the focus for that back end is really holding the form together and making sure that we can stay efficient, knowing that you've got a long day ahead of you once you get out of the water. So yeah, very boring, very simple, 10 400s, 15 to 20 seconds rest, Ironman specific effort and session there for that one.
Yeah, I like that. I have used basically the exact same session quite a lot in my coaching and as an athlete. And yeah, it's a staple, I would say, for the final preparation period for an Ironman. We have to thank our sponsors, Precision Fuel Hydration. Jack, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, so Precision Fuel Hydration, I've been using their products for many years now. And honestly, I've tried a lot of other products as well, but you really can't go wrong. It's not just the effort that goes into the products, but the research and the science behind it. They're an amazing resource. They have a lot going for them. Recently in the winter, I've been getting through a lot of their carb mix on the bike. And actually, this is the most efficient carbohydrate they sell in terms of cost effectiveness. So price per gram of carbohydrate, the carb mix is a great way to go in the winter when you're getting through a lot of carbohydrates. You don't necessarily have to be practicing the exact stuff you're going to be taking on race day, and you're just looking for fueling as best you can, a little bit of gut adaptation there. And yeah, Precision Fuel and Hydration, check out their products. Not only do they do the carbohydrate mix, which has the electrolytes in there as well, they have obviously a great range of gels, hydration. They have some chews as well, which are amazing.
And they're delicious.
Delicious. Very delicious. Yeah. Check them out.
Yeah. And as a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of 2026 by using the code TTS2026 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now then, my number four on my list is a VO2 max session. And this is also a session that I got from the squad that I was swimming in for a long time. And it's, well, you can vary it a bit, but I'm going to explain what we built up to basically after a couple of easier versions of it. But the main set, there would be 4 rounds of 8 times 25, and each round you do on a shorter interval, on a shorter send off time. So the first round you do it would depend on the lane, but the lane that I was in, I would swim the 25s probably on 16-17 seconds. So my first round, the send off time would be 35 seconds. The second round, the send off time would be 30, then 25, and then 20. So in the last round, you're getting just 3 to 4 seconds rest when you're already tired. And to add on top of that, the eighth rep of each round would not be freestyle, but it would be butterfly. So that adds to the to making it quite brutal, because especially when you're not the most proficient at butterfly, it really takes it out of you. And then between each round, you would probably you would have a bit of passive rest and a 200 active recovery, and then you would go again. So decent rest between rounds. And so I guess the interesting thing about this session is that in that first round, you can go really quite fast. It's almost like a mix of speed and VO2, because you're getting slightly more than 1-to-1 work to rest ratio. So slightly more rest than a 1-to-1, in my example, at least, when if I was swimming those, probably that first round on 16 seconds and the send-off was 35, right? Which also takes it out of you then and adds some more, builds up lactate for then the subsequent rounds where you're suddenly forced to do it on slightly higher work to rest ratio than that 1-to-1 when it's going down and down and down again. So it really also, I think it's a great session to show the progress of your swimming endurance or swimming durability almost, because probably for me, I never felt that my speed in the first round changed too much from the first time we did it in the base training phase, usually until we were approaching the race phase. But what changed was really my ability to almost hold those same splits in the final round as I did in the first round. Not quite, but almost. Whereas the first time that I might have done that, they fell apart much more. The idea is that you shouldn't let it fall apart. You need to pace it well enough that you don't fall apart, of course. But that's quite hard, especially when you do it in a squad. It's quite competitive and you have people all around you trying to do the same thing. So that's a really good set. It's effective. It's fun. I found it a really fun set, except for the butterfly, which I didn't find too fun. So, and this is a session that can just as well be done solo, of course. It's very easy to achieve. You just have to basically figure out roughly what is your split going to be that you swim the 25s on, and then you set the send-off, the cycles accordingly, so that you finish the last one with basically a very short rest period, whereas the first one you have pretty decent. And you can build up to this by, you wouldn't start probably with 4 rounds the first time you do it, but you start with maybe 3 rounds and maybe even the rest period that you get in the final round would be slightly higher the first times you do it, and you would shift those send off times accordingly as you get fitter and as you do it more times.
Nice, yeah. I guess you would maybe expect your kind of stroke and speed to fall off a little bit on a session like this, right? And it's probably not the worst thing if it does, because it's just the nature of it, right?
Within reason, yeah, absolutely. Like I think one second per 25 is almost inevitable. Mm-hmm. 2 seconds, at least for a few of them, can be fine. Probably, let's say if I was doing the whole first set on 16 seconds, then the final set might be, a couple of 2-3 17s, and then, or maybe 3-4 17s and 4-5 18s. But then when you think about it, if you're doing 25s and you drop 2 seconds, that's already 8 seconds per 100, which is quite significant. So probably any more than two seconds for the 25 is probably too much of a drop off.
Yeah, for sure. I do love the fact that you put the last rep there, butterfly. I actually don't have any medley or kind of butterfly in any of my sessions today, which is a bit of an oversight, because I'm a big fan of adding some medleys and varying the strokes a little bit there. But I guess mainly I would typically do that in just general aerobic swimming. But yeah, I think that's an awesome touch to add that last rep there, butterfly. So much to be gained, right, in terms of just the power that you need to generate in order to swim fly. So yeah, I absolutely love that.
I actually forgot to say, and I forgot to write it down in my notes, but I'm pretty sure that what we did was that after that eighth rep, we would do a deck up and run around the pool, because this was a private pool for the club. So we could do whatever we wanted, really. And we did that for lots of different types of sessions. And I found that was really, again, with the draft legal focus especially, it's quite an important, valuable thing to do. And so you're doing that fly rep and your heart rate is through the roof, and then you have to pull yourself up onto the pool deck and keep running a lap around the pool. So that, yeah, that was added to the misery, but the misery that you somehow really enjoyed.
Yeah, no, that's super specific. And yeah, if you have the opportunity to do that, that's, yeah, it's great. All right, should I go on to my number three now?
Yep, let's go with that.
So this one, again, it's not a full session for this one, but it's descending 50s. So building 50s, basically. Typically, how I prescribe this is kind of 8 50s as a prep set for a main set or within an aerobic swim, where you're building or descending the rep time for reps 1 through to 4, and then resetting again at rep 5, and building again through to the 8th rep there. So execution, we'd want to start at around RP 5 or so, I guess maybe upper aerobic, kind of upper zone 2, that kind of LT1 type effort. And you want to aim for an increase of about 2 seconds per 50 per rep until rep number 4. So there's many reasons for doing this kind of a set. It's very important to have different gears to go through in the pool. But mainly it's great to see how your increase in effort translates to an increase in speed, or sometimes lack of increase in speed, right? So you will likely see a slightly diminishing increase in speed as the effort increases. But if it's not increasing as you would expect, then it highlights that there is potentially a breakdown in your stroke, and that's something that you need to investigate further at that kind of intensity. So you can play around with your stroke yourself with different cues there, potentially playing around with the head position, body position, the turnover, and you want to try and get the speed to match the effort. So the set can also work well with 25s for potentially more of a beginner athlete. Obviously, the shorter the rep, then the less difference in speed, or the less difference in terms of total time is going to be seen between reps. So you need to account for that. But basically, the overall kind of aim for this session is not just the kind of speed touching through the gears, and that almost as a good kind of preparation or physiological adaptation, but mainly to see where the stroke is kind of breaking down, and seeing yourself what you can do whilst playing with different aspects, different cues, in order to improve your efficiency there. So yeah, as I said, I use this with all my athletes all the time, at least once or twice per week. Pretty much year round, we're doing this type of a set, and it's just a great way to check in with where you're at, technically speaking.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's also something that I prescribe very often in those prep sets. But I love how you, yeah, break it down into analyzing where your stroke breaks down, and even playing around with that to see what you can do. That's definitely something that can be extremely educational for any athlete to see that mismatch in increasing effort versus increasing in speed. So that's really good.
Yeah.
Sorry, go.
I was going to say as well, I mean, if you have the opportunity to get some footage as well and do some video analysis, looking at that pace at where the stroke breaks down is a good place to go after you've obviously gone through kind of just the general bigger problems that you might see at all intensities. But having a look specifically at that pace is a great next progression in terms of technical analysis as well there.
Great point. Yeah. My number three is an open water swim set. So, well, I have two options here. But both options are basically short race simulations. You would set up a course of, it could be 200-300 meters. Normally, how I do it is you have the beach here. This is, listeners of the podcast might not see it, but on YouTube, you'll see it. It's basically a triangle-shaped course. So you would set up one buoy diagonally a bit out from your starting point. So we'd do a diagonal up out to the right, and then you would swim across to the left, and then you would come back in diagonally. So you would have that triangle or upside down triangle shape of the course. And this is definitely something that I recommend doing in a group. That's what really makes this session like a worthy of being on this list, in my opinion. It can still be a good session otherwise, but if you do it solo, it maybe loses some of the extra benefits that you get. So doing it in a group, just doing like starting with however many people, 3, 4, 10 other people, and swimming that, doing it as a race, basically swimming that course 200-300 meters, doing all of the running in from the beach, running out, and then taking a good rest and doing it again, because you're doing a kind of short effort and you're doing it all out. So this is super, super good, obviously, for developing your racing skills, your open water skills, and you're doing it at intensity. It ends up being like, depending on slightly on the length of the course you have, but typically it ends up being a bit of a VO2 session or maybe a threshold session, depending on how fast you are. But you're doing it specifically, you're learning how to race while also training your physiology extremely well. And you have that same thing that I mentioned with the relays, that you get the extra incentive to really push yourself to a level that can sometimes be hard to reach when you're doing it solo. It's also just super fun. The other alternative to this session is pretty similar, but doing it as, again, relays. I mentioned that before in my number 5. So you would have 2-person teams in this case. And so, yeah, you would have one person. And then you might have, let's say you have 4 or 5 teams of 2, so a group of 8 or 10. Person number 1 in each team, they would start together. They would do that race, and then they do the whole course, come up onto the beach, and they would tag you, and you would head in, and you would swim your segment, and then you could choose to do whether you do 2-3 rounds before taking a longer break. Of course, you always get a rest while your teammate is doing their round, but so you could do a few more rounds, because you're always getting some rest while that's going on. So similar to, yeah, you get the similar benefits there, but slightly different race dynamics, because for example, you might have a situation where your teammate is coming in a little bit behind a group of a couple of people, and you really want to get back on their feet. So you get to practice that different scenario. So actually mixing it up and doing both those sorts of sessions, if you can. Again, there's the difficulty here that you really need to have some kind of group to get this done, but it's worth it to try if you have the opportunity to do this, because it's really a super good session, extremely good.
Yeah, nice. I actually have a very similar session for my number 2. So
right.
I'll not just go straight into that, because that's where a few of the differences, there's a couple of differences, but yeah, no, awesome session. I mean, as I said, for my number 2, very similar, but with a little bit more of a focus on the start and the get out speed. And also, I've kind of done this one to be done solo as well, and without access to cans or swim buoys. So again, beach start, hit the water, entry. But for this one, it's 50 strokes hard, race kind of start effort, and then 100 strokes settle. And then swim back easy, and then repeat that 5 to 10 times through. And yeah, kind of just to echo what you said, I think those swim specific or open water skills, super important to dial in. And this type of a session, really, especially the start, the entry, which I think is often, especially even at the elite level, people are not doing a good job. They, with the kind of entry and approach, they tend to put the brakes on a little bit as soon as they enter the water. And you might be thinking, well, it doesn't matter if I'm an amateur athlete, there's no mass starts, and I'm not necessarily going to be fighting in groups. But being able to hit the water quickly and efficiently is a super valuable skill. You're going to save a lot of time compared to someone who starts, you know, walking and wading in, basically. So being able to do that is very valuable. And also that kind of the approach of hitting the water, swimming hard, and then having to settle in with that lactate clearance kind of that we're having to train, it's super valuable for even within the swim, where we might have to close different gaps potentially someone who we're swimming with has just got away around a buoy or something, and we're going to have to surge to catch up to people and then settle in. And being able to swim and hold yourself together under that fatigue is, again, a really useful and specific skill to what we need to prepare for, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I have definitely prescribed basically that exact session quite a bit as well to athletes. It's I think it makes sense to do that. And like you said, that's something that is more easily accessible for everybody. Like you only need a beach and a body of water. That's it. My number 5, 4, and 3 were maybe a bit less standard sessions in a way, or not, at least not the session types that people are maybe the most used to hearing about. But number 2 and number 1 are going to go back to that bread and butter, like very standard types of sessions. And they are standard for a reason, like they're just really good sessions. So my number 2 is a classic VO2 max set. So it's 2 rounds of 6 times 100 with a work to rest ratio of 2 to 1, which means that if you, let's say you swim the 100 in 120, you would get 40 seconds rest. And then you would have a bit of an active recovery. Usually I would give 200 meters of active recovery or 200 yards of active recovery between the two rounds, plus a little bit of extra passive recovery. And there you'd want to, you would basically want to pace it fairly evenly, but hit as high a speed as possible, best effort through the set, essentially, which usually you would usually end up being like just a slightly faster probably than your 400 TT pace, or right around your 400 TT pace, depending on your level of the swimmer you are. For really good swimmers, you might not be faster in 400 TT pace, but for most age group athletes, you would be a little bit faster in 400 TT pace.
Yeah, nice. No, that's a good session. Very tough. How would you use this in blocks, or kind of how frequently would you use this?
Yeah, I would use it in blocks mostly, although it depends on how often the athlete can swim. For an athlete that do more swims per week, it might be something that is almost more ever present in their swimming. Like if you have the ability to swim 4 times a week, which most age groupers don't, but some do, then yeah, you could. I see, for some athletes at least, I see value in doing a VO2 max session on a pretty much weekly basis. I would not use this exact session all the time, though. I would mix it up with a couple of other sessions that I really like, 2 times 12 times 50, that sort of thing, and even depending on the, you could even extend it out to 150s or 200s for very, very good swimmers. But yeah, I think for most age groupers, I limit it to 50s, 75s and 100s just to prevent the worst stroke breakdown. So yeah, but for most people, I would use it more in blocks perhaps, because there's not enough swims in the week that I can justify really doing it on a weekly basis.
Yeah, for sure. I do like that session. I typically would lean towards more shorter reps, like as you said, for triathletes, especially just when they're managing the bike and run as well. But yeah, no, great session. So on to my number 1, and similar theme to you with your top 2, is that this is just a bit of a staple, just quite a classic session. Nothing too exciting going on, and that is just a build to threshold, or hundreds building to threshold. So typically it's volume could be anywhere from 1200 to 3000 meters, but typically somewhere in the middle there for most athletes, obviously depending on ability. And I like to start at kind of upper aerobic, kind of upper zone two intensity, and build to threshold over the set. So can be done by increasing the pace and maintaining rest, or maintaining the turnaround. And this is typically better earlier in the year when the form's not quite there. And so a typical session could be 3 sets of 8 100s. The turnaround would be around 10 to 15 seconds more than your critical swimming speed. And you would build each round of those 8 100s from about RPE 5 to 6 to 7. And then a progression on this as the form builds and as we kind of get through the year could be on, or I like to use decreasing turnarounds as well. So for the last set, you want to aim for a turnaround that's about 4 to 5 seconds more than your CSS. So you're really touching and going there. So if your CSS is 111, 110 or something, then you would typically do the first 8 on 125, the second 8 on 120, and then the third 8 on 115. I think the reason why I really like to do a session where we build through to threshold rather than just going straight out the door or straight in the pool at threshold is that most people tend to go out too hard. And this just allows us to have a little bit more of a progressive approach. The upper body tends to produces more lactate, so it's easy to overdo it, overcook it. And having more of a progressive approach, as I said, is just a much better way to execute this session type. And it also makes it a little bit more palatable, a bit more repeatable, and easier to get good execution, consistency, and kind of compliance over the course of the year. Because, yeah, as I'm sure you agree, this session needs to be, or a session similar to this needs to be in the program long term, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I really like that. And yeah, especially with the descending turnaround, that I've done some very similar sessions and they're quite fun because you also get that challenge of making the turnaround and being able to do the next rep with basically just a touch and go rest almost. But yeah, I agree with everything you said as well about the rationale for building up the threshold. I think there are a couple of other things that people can do as well to achieve that same thing. So one thing is to actually do threshold intervals that are a little bit longer, not like crazy long, but if you're always doing 100s and you're always going too fast, well, you might do 200s or even 300s. It still depends on the swimmer, because if your stroke is going to break down after 100 or 150, then there's probably no point in doing that. But if you're good enough that you can maintain a decent stroke, and it doesn't necessarily depend on so much on being a fast swimmer, but just having some endurance and some stroke stability, then that's another option to just do slightly longer reps. And the other one, I think, as well, is, no, actually, that's the only one. I'd forget the other one. That doesn't make any sense. Even like what it says in my head initially.
We'll never know. Yeah, no, for sure. You definitely need to kind of be varying the rep length as well. But this is just a staple for me. It's a nice place to reset as well, almost from a testing standpoint, having the descending turnarounds as well. It's a really good measure of where you're at on any given day. So if you're not wanting to do TTs all the time, doing a session like this where you're descending to a really tight turnaround, it's a good measure of where you're at. And if you have it in every few weeks at least, then it's it's a nice way to see where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a similar intended purpose as my number one, which is a threshold set, pure threshold set. I've chosen 12 by 200. I have a bit of a table for how long people should be doing for, or how much distance people should be doing for their threshold sets, which I've kind of pegged it at. If your critical speed is 145 or slower, then going up to 2000 meters is probably where I would cap it in most cases. If your critical speed is between 145 slower than 125 up to 145, then up to 2600 or so. And if you're at 125 or faster, then I would go up to 3,200. So you're getting a 600 meter increase there for each of those three levels. So this one presumes basically that you're in that middle group. So you're between up to, of course, doesn't mean that you always do that. So you will build up to it from when you get back into the swing of things. But this is a good session when you're in that middle group and you are kind of approaching your peak swim fitness, or if you're in that highest group, so you're at 125 or faster and you've not yet built out to or built up to the to your peak sessions, and it's 12 by 200 at threshold. And I would give slightly longer recoveries than a lot of people do, and that's simply because I also like to give slightly more volume than most people do. So to make it reasonable, that's how I do it. So I would probably give 30 seconds, which works out to be about a 4:1 to 5:1 ratio for most people. If you're approaching that 1:40 or slower, I might even do 40 seconds. But let's say for somebody around 1:30, yeah, 30 seconds for 200s is probably what I would do for threshold swims. So yeah, very classic. And the goal there would be to just pace this evenly. And you might be right at your critical speed, or you might be 1 second slower than your critical speed. Even starting at 2 seconds slower than your critical speed for the first couple of reps is totally fine. But yeah, the goal would definitely be to not slow down at all throughout the set. And that's knowing your pace, having done a TT, or even just through building up to this set throughout the weeks, will tell you more or less where you are and what you can expect. So you'll use the previous week's session as the baseline for the next week's session, basically. And of course, there are a million ways that you can structure threshold sets. But if I had to choose one threshold session that I give the most frequently, it's probably 200s, and 12x200 is a good example of that. And that's something that I would give on an almost weekly basis, basically. For triathletes, I think pretty much all distances are so related to your swim threshold. So that's, very much a staple in the program.
Yeah, nice. No, I like that session. I use it a lot as well. How would you say it should feel for the first few reps for that kind of a session?
Yeah, I mean, it should feel very manageable. It shouldn't feel... When you have assessed your threshold correctly, this is probably where people go wrong. Like they overestimate their threshold. And that can happen if you only do the 200 plus 400 critical speed test. You might get an inflated number. Or if you don't test at all, you just guess where it is. But if you've done a critical speed test with a longer test in there as well, like the 800, or you've done just one, if you just do the 1,000 time trial, even just take your 1,000 average pace as your threshold, if we're honest, like maybe that's not physiologically correct, because that's probably, for your 1,000, you probably did somewhere between 12 minutes and 20, 22 minutes, right? So, but... I guess in swimming, we have to think a bit differently as well. It's not just about the ability to metabolically and cardiovascularly sustain the effort, but it's also it has a bit of a muscular endurance element to it for sure. And just that technical element of maintaining technique as you fatigue. So for that reason, practically speaking, if we talk about, let's say, functional thresholds, I think your average for triathlete age groupers, your 1000 TT average pace can be a good proxy for what the speed you should swim in your threshold sets. I think that tends to work out quite well, and it tends to work out really similar to the threshold you will get if you do a critical speed test with a 200, 400, and 800 as well. So yeah, that's, I've forgotten your question, but that's basically the pacing that, yeah, if you have tested correctly, then use that test result. Oh yeah, and then it won't really, it won't feel that hard, honestly, for the first couple of reps, because you're only doing it for 200 instead of doing it for a full 1,000.
I think that's the big mistake, right, with sessions like this, and this is the danger when you start doing longer reps, but it's super valuable if you can get it right. I mean, because critical speed is not the same as threshold, right? It's not maximum lactate steady state, but when we're doing these shorter reps, you can definitely swim a bit faster, but still not that much faster, and it's difficult to get it right. But yeah, I think, what would you say to someone who, say they do go out too hot for the first couple of reps, they're excited, they're fresh, and then they start to really feed it? At that point, is it session over, or can you reassess in the moment and reset and kind of salvage the right session stimulus?
I definitely think you can salvage. I wouldn't be encouraging people to quit the session just because you made a mistake early on. I would say that that's a lesson learned. It's going to be a bit more painful in the rest of your reps, but obviously any moment in time, like presence here is key. So you want to be present in that session and figure out that, oh, I have 8 reps still to go and the first 4 were quite tough. And now I'm feeling that I'm already not going to be able to maintain my pace. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to try to force yourself to swim the same pace that you pretty much know that you won't be able to do? Or are you going to just think about, well, what is the sustainable pace for 8 reps to go given my current fatigue level? It's the latter. That's what I would say. You need to assess where you are, what you can do for the rest of the set, and then just do that. I think with this, I think a mistake probably as well is that people go into, I mean, I'm a big fan of RPE-based training, but in swimming, I think a lot of athletes are just not really good at it. So you need to learn to use RPE alongside having a bit of data orientation. So I would pretty much always recommend athletes for these types of sets to know within a 1 to 2 second margin what is the split or pace that they want to do for their reps. And then if they feel within the session that actually on this day, this feels slightly too hard or slightly too easy, then you can adjust as you go. But you need to, I would say that you should have an initial baseline objective for what you want to do that you adjust from. And that's maybe sometimes the difficulty in swimming. People are not quite as aware of their level and what they should be swimming. It's not as intuitive as bike power or run pace for a lot of people. So that's where I think a lot of mistakes come from. But again, if you have done some proper testing, and you don't even need to do that. If you have built up to this session, you started with 8 200s, then you did 10 200s, and now you're doing 12 200s, always using the previous session as a marker for where you are and adjusting from there. Within a couple of sessions, you should be able to pretty much nail at least what you should be able to do. Then if you can execute it, it's of course a different story. If you struggle to pace, it feels like you're going really easy, but the first reps you're always doing, you know, 5 6 seconds too fast for the split, not for the pace. So 2 3 seconds for the pace. Then, yeah, that's something that obviously more swimming and more awareness and just trying to focus on that will improve over time. But I'm also in these types of sessions, I'm a pretty big fan of using things like form goggles or the Finnis Tempo Trainer or any metronome, even the Garmin, setting the alerts on your Garmin watch to basically work like a Finnis Tempo Trainer if you don't have a Finnis Tempo Trainer to help with pacing. I use that as a pacing aid. I'm not at all against that. In many cases, I'm quite encouraging athletes to use that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's you'd be surprised how easy it does feel, especially in the first half of the first few reps, right? It's so easy to overdo it there. And I think, I guess, you can still say you go out too hard at the first kind of quarter of a session like this. A lot of times you could still kind of push through and finish the session, and even you might fail a little bit, you probably will fail a little bit, but you'd still stay within kind of close range to where you started at. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're getting the right stimulus, right? Yeah. So I think this is one thing that I like to stress, is that yes, maybe towards the back end of the session, you could start to have that kind of acidosis type, lactate accumulation type feeling. But if you're getting that towards the beginning and then you're just riding that red line for the whole session, that's not really a threshold session. And we're really probably getting more of a lactate production, lactate tolerance type stimulus there. And yes, it's a workout. It's a good workout, but that's in the context of what we're looking for. It's not the right workout. So yeah, I think that's where people need to be careful. Maybe mistakes are made on a regular basis, and that's where you won't see progression. I think with threshold as well, the progression's slow, right? We're not seeing week on week increases usually, unless we're coming back from something or, you know, in very specific examples. So it's just because we're not seeing progression over a month or so, it doesn't necessarily mean that the work is not working. It's just that it takes time. And it's better to go through that feeling like even the pace is stagnating, and it will kind of come good and come into fruition at some point, and you need to just stay confident and be hitting and executing every session to the best of your ability on each day.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think that's a common misconception that people see threshold session as a threshold set on the swim, and they think best effort, because a lot of, to be honest, in a lot of squad environments perhaps, and even a lot of coaching, it's kind of how it is prescribed. And even when it's not, it's often how it's understood by the athletes. So it's just almost like, I don't know if you could call it cultural misconception, but yeah, that's not what it should be. It should be that upper end of what is actually sustainable, what you can sustain for quite some time. And in terms of the progression, yeah, that's where the pace is not going to progress. That's going to be a very much a long-term thing, but what you can progress is the total duration of work, even the distance of, or the total distance of work and the distance of the intervals going from 200s to 250s to 300s and so on. Going back to my squad days, I remember distinctly us doing 3x800 threshold sessions. I think we might have done 3x1000, although I don't want to say that for sure. And to be honest, like, at least for me, I couldn't quite hit threshold when it was even 3x800, but pretty close, like maybe two seconds off my actual critical speed. So yeah, reasonable. And so yeah, I guess the point there is that it's not a best effort swim, and the goal of the session is to work on your sustainable aerobic swimming, right? And that's not something that you get. We've had plenty throughout, even in this episode, plenty of episodes where you can work on that lactate production, lactate tolerance, and VO2 max, all of those things. Those are all important in swimming, probably more important than in running and cycling, at least for triathletes. But that doesn't mean that you don't need a really solid aerobic base and those threshold swims for you to really develop that. Then they need to be executed well. And that means, yeah, like in terms of RPE, I think that the way you feel when you start a threshold swim or a threshold set in swimming is a lower RPE than the way you feel when you started on the bike or the run. And the only exception might be if you're a really, really good swimmer that have grown up swimming, because they just built up such an ability. But for the vast majority of people, I don't think that's the case. Like, I would say that the RPE for me when I start a threshold swim is probably around 6, and whereas on the bike and run, it's definitely 7. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind in terms of execution.
Yeah, 100% agree. And yeah, I guess it's no coincidence that we've kind of put similar-ish sessions, right? Like, throughout that kind of ranking, we haven't conferred before at all. We just we haven't seen each other's until recording. So
what was your number two, Jack? I can't remember.
It was the open water one that you had as number three. It was similar.
And did you have a VO2 max session or something?
No, I didn't actually. Yeah, I was toying with it, but yeah, I ended up, I mean, I had the descending 50s where we kind of go through the gears to VO2 max, but not a specific VO2 max session, which again, that's not to say that I don't think it's very important and up there. This is just me picking out sessions that I like the look of on the day, really. There's not much thought that's gone into it from a bigger picture type perspective there for me.
Here's a question for you. If you would have to upvote one of my sessions and downvote one of them, which one would you upvote and which one would you downvote? So as a reminder, we had the speed relay, the 50s relay at number 5. Yeah. We had the 4 rounds of 8x25 VO2 max. We had the open water race simulation. Then we had the VO2 max 2x6x100 and then the threshold 12x200.
I love that, the open water race simulation session there with the group. I didn't do any group stuff in mine, but I kind of wish I did. So I'm going to upvote that. And I would maybe downvote the threshold, but just because of what we talked about, I've done that session even myself, and I've seen a lot of people it's easy to overcook it at the beginning. So it's an awesome session to get when you get it right, but I think it can be difficult. So But again, I'd still keep it up there, one or two. Yeah. What about you, Fuzzy?
So run me through your list from 5 to 1 again.
So I had the ankle band, the 10x400 Ironman prep, the descending 50s, then the open water, get out speed, and then the hundreds descending to threshold.
Okay, so I'm going to... this is a hard one. I'm going to upvote the Ironman session. To be honest, like that's such a good, like basically a must do Ironman session if you're doing an Ironman, obviously. And I'm going to maybe downvote the open water swim, just because, it's super valuable, but for a lot of age groupers, even though we said that the start is important and all of that, takeout speed, but it's maybe still less important. So I would try to I would maybe go for some other type of open water swim. But yeah, I know it's difficult if you're solo and you don't have buoys and things, then that's still probably one of the best sessions you can do. But perhaps what I would do instead is I would maybe a similar session, but have slightly less focus on the takeout speed and just do slightly longer like race effort. So it would still be something quite similar. But yeah, I might download that one.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the episode. So you can find, as always, the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com. And I'm pretty sure that we'll do something similar for like we did in this episode, for biking and running sessions as well, because at least I really enjoyed this. This was really nice. And if you're interested in coaching, training plans, consultations, customized plans, we offer all of those things. So you can check out scientifictriathlon.com. Also, I should have mentioned this in last episode, but I forgot about it. I don't do a training camp this year personally, but David from Scientific Triathlon, he's taken over the Mallorca training camp and he's running it at the end of April this year. So you can find information about that as well on scientifictriathlon.com. So it's still a scientific triathlon training camp as it has been, with the same concept. But David is solely responsible for that. So any questions about the training camp, if you're interested in registering, reach out to David on david@scientifictriathlon.com directly. That is pretty much it for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.